The following podcast is from the weekly message at Summit Church in Upstate South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Today, really, we wanted to highlight Rice Bowls as well as Back to Back, which is another organization that we partner with. Every summer, we take a trip with Back to Back Ministries to Mexico. My wife and daughter have been a couple of times. Many of the others of you in the room have been. It's really for children kind of ages 10 and up to be able to go with mom or dad and be a part of this trip and work at an orphanage there in Mexico for a week. And so one of the things we're trying to do with Global Intentionality Month is get a little ahead of the curve and getting information out to all of you because hard to believe, I know we're not even to Christmas, but summer will be here soon. And so of 2020. And so obviously things have to be planned. If you're interested in learning more about the back-to-back trip that's coming up in June of 2020, you can sign up out at the information desk today. There's a sign-up sheet. There's going to be an informational meeting. It doesn't sign you up for anything other than coming to the informational meeting and learning a little bit more. And so if you want to do that. Something else we're going to do new this year, in case you're interested, mom and dad. Nathan Forrest, our family discipleship pastor, is going to be going on the trip as well. And one of the reasons that he's going on the trip this year is because we understand that we might have some middle schoolers and high schoolers who would like to be a part of this trip, but mom or dad can't go. And so Nathan's going to be going in that regard. So if you're interested in your middle schooler or high schooler going, you can also sign up to get more information about that. And we would just want to let you know that that was available to you. So thanks for praying for our missionaries. Thanks for giving here, which supports our missionaries. Thanks for giving to Rice Bowls. Rice Bowls also going on trips. You can go to Rice Bowls' website, and they have trips that they're running as well. The CFO of Rice Bowls, the chief financial officer, his name is Johnny Ramatam. Him and his family are part of Summit Spartanburg, and he's always running on trips, and we have folks that are going with him as well to places like Honduras and Costa Rica and Guatemala and India. And so if you're interested in that, you can get more information in that as well. Okay, I think I covered a lot there. That was a lot to cover. Grayson, was there anything that I forgot in regards to all of that global intentionality stuff that I was supposed to say? Thank you, Grayson. That was very nice. I appreciate that. Hey, if you're a guest, my name's Jason, by the way, and I work here, and I like it. I'm one of the teaching pastors and elders here, and love the opportunity to hang out here most weeks, and as Grayson has already said, we're thrilled you're hanging out with us today. Thanks for filling out that guest card. You can also stop by our information desk out in the foyer after the service, and Carolyn Kennedy is working the desk today, a good friend of mine and a good friend of many, and she's very friendly, and she would love to meet you, meet your family, give you a free coffee mug. They're very nice. And you can, it's absolutely free to you. And so stop by there. We'd love to meet you at the information desk after the service as well. But thanks so much for being our guest today. We say this a lot. There's a lot of great churches around. When we say great churches, we mean we know there are other churches close by that want to make much of Jesus and the gospel, which is our heartbeat here at Summit. And so the fact that you are our guest, we don't take that for granted. We're just super thankful that you decided to join us today. And we are just week two of a study through the book of Jonah. If you missed last week, you can listen online at summitupstate.org. It's there for you. But today we're going to be in chapter 2 of Jonah. So you can go ahead and turn in your Bibles if you want to. Actually, we'll start in the last verse of chapter 1 and go into 2. But as you turn there, I want to ask you a question. You do not have to raise your hands, but I'd love for you to think about it. Here's the question. The last time someone confronted you with your sin, something you had said or done, what was your immediate response? Hit pause. The last time someone confronted you with your sin, what was your immediate response? Was it a pretty quick, thank you so much for showing me that? You're right. I don't often see myself correctly. Thank you for pointing that out. I have some blind spots, and I'm super thankful that you saw where I'm blind and you pointed it out. Hey, would you do me a favor? As a matter of fact, would you just keep pointing that out every time you see it going on with me, what I say or what I do? I really need those rebukes in my life. Did you say, would you please forgive me if you had offended someone? Was that your immediate response when you were confronted with something? Or possibly, did it go more like this? Well, you don't understand why I said that or why I did that. Was your immediate response, well, you know what? You don't have the whole story. Was your immediate response, at least maybe even in your mind, if you saw all the good things I did, if you saw all the good things I said, maybe you wouldn't be so concerned about the sinful things that I do or say. Maybe it went like this. Who do you think you are to point out my blind spots? You got blind spots. I don't point out your blind spots, but now seems like a great time to also point out your blind spots. I had this list in my wallet. I've just been keeping it for the right time. Now seems like the right time. We laugh because it's so relatable, right? Or I think for a lot of us, it's actually this. It's one of these. This is pretty common. I'm sorry, will you forgive me, but. I want to lovingly encourage you to drop the but. The but never works, right? I'm really sorry, but if you really, and then you try to dismiss, as if saying, if you really understood why that, you wouldn't be offended by that. When we spend our days attempting to convince ourselves of our own righteousness or convince others of our righteousness, we are missing opportunities to live and grow in the life-transforming grace given to us through Jesus. Maybe I could say it this way. You'll never be overwhelmed by the grace that you don't think you need. And the grace that you don't think you need won't truly transform you. In my years of pastoring and walking with people, I've noticed many who have a great grasp of grace theologically. What I mean by that is they know it biblically. They know what it is fundamentally. They can quickly get to the passages of Scripture that speak of it. Yet they can also walk into a room like this on Sundays and sing about it and still live functionally incredibly self-righteous, self-made, self-centered. As we continue to study the life of Jonah, which I said last week was actually, and I believe it to be true, more about God than Jonah, we see a God who is committed to the process of grace. And I think we see that even more as we continue our study today. I'm super thankful for it. My hope and my prayer as I've been studying this week is that your heart would walk away encouraged as we see it begin, continue to play out in the life of Jonah. This is what it says in verse 17 of chapter 1, there at the very end. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah. Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days, 3 nights. Stop there for a second. If you remember where we left off last week, Jonah's thrown overboard by some pagan sailors who had come to know the Lord, worship the Lord, Yahweh, in the midst of a really bad storm. And when Jonah is thrown overboard into the sea, you can observe here in verse 17 that the Lord appointed a fish to swallow him up. Now, this is not the real point of my message today, but I feel like it's a great time to throw it in. If you willfully run from God, there's no telling where you'll end up. Again, it's not the main point, but I think it's a valid point, right? Like, I know it doesn't necessarily apply to everybody in the room today. Maybe it's just a person or a few people. But when we intentionally run from, walk in disobedience, willingly walk opposite of the way that we've been invited to walk with the Lord, there's no telling where we end up. A case in point would be this. When Jonah got on the boat to attempt to run from the presence of God because he didn't want to go to a pagan nation and tell them about the Lord's impending judgment. So I'm going to go the opposite way. And he winds up on a boat full of pagan sailors. Oh, the irony, right? Do you think when he got on the boat, he had this thought? I bet this ends up with me in the belly of a fish. Do you think he thought of that? No, he didn't think that, right? His downward spiral happened faster than most, right? For many people, maybe your story, in the past, maybe what you've come out of, what you would articulate was, it wasn't like one day I'm in a boat and the next day I'm in the belly of a fish. It's a slower process. It's a slower process of poor choices away from God, away from what God says that eventually reveals what was in our heart all along. Yeah? Others have pointed this out. I think it's interesting as you read through the verses that Jonah was constantly going down until he got all the way down into the belly of a fish, right? Like earlier in chapter 1, after God tells him to go to Nineveh, it says he went down to Joppa and then down into the ship. But not just down into the ship. He got down into the depths of the ship. And now he's in the ocean. But it's not just that he's in the ocean. He's in the bottom of the ocean in the belly of a fish. This natural regression, progression, however you want to say it. But as we've been saying, the point really is not Jonah. The point's really not a fish. Somewhere along the way, we decided it was a whale. I don't know. Doesn't really say that it was a whale. I don't know how many other big fishes we got out there. Maybe a lot of big fishes that I'm unaware of. The point really isn't Jonah. It's God. And for Jonah, this isn't just about physical survival. It's about a spiritual revival that begins to take place. I think that for a lot of us, when we go through difficult times, it's easy to solely focus on the physical survival part. When a loving God is saying, I actually want to use the difficulties that you're walking through as a spiritual revival in your life. I think God is constantly saying to us, I want to show you in the midst of what you think is just surviving, that you have some tendencies to continue to be self-reliant and self-focused and self-righteous and self-centered. It's so interesting to me what Jonah begins to do as he's sitting in the belly of the fish. He begins to pray, and that's what chapter 2 is. Chapter 2 is his prayer. Let's look at it together. I'll read it. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish, saying, I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, you heard my voice. Verse 3 says, for you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood surrounded me, and all your waves and your billows passed over me. Verse 4 says, then I said, I am driven away from your sight, yet I shall again look upon your holy temple. The waters closed in over me to take my life. The deep surrounded me, weeds wrapped around my head at the roots of the mountains. I went down to the land whose bars closed upon me forever. Yet you brought up my life from the pit, O Lord my God. When my life was fainting away, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to you into your holy temple. We'll hit pause there for a second. So from inside the fish, Jonah prays to the Lord his God. It is... You read through your scriptures and you find a lot of people crying out to the Lord. This is one of the more odd places that we find people crying out to God in the Bible. But, and not to make light of it, I just think I want to state the obvious. Once you realize a fish has eaten you, you are incredibly desperate. And oftentimes, desperate people turn to God. It's all throughout the Bible. Desperate people crying out to God. So he cries out, and it's interesting what he says from the belly of the fish. Did you see it? God heard my prayers. In the verses that I read, 5 times in this prayer, Jonah mentions the extreme anguish that caused him to pray, and each time he keeps coming back to this. God has heard me, and God is rescuing me. God has heard me. God is rescuing me. And I would lovingly, as one of your pastors and friends, suggest to you today that that is central to the process of transformative grace in your life, in my life. It's not something simply that we needed, although we did. It's what we need, as in we do every day. When I was studying at Cedarville University, that's where I went to college back in the day, I took a lot of Bible classes. As you can imagine, to be a pastor, they wanted you to do that. And side note, one of the things I love about Cedarville is that even if you were majoring in something else, you automatically took enough Bible classes to minor in Bible. Another side note, one of my Bible professors, Jacqueline Cato's dad, Dr. Kowser. Did y'all know that? And sometimes when I teach here, Dr. Kowser's in the room, and I always feel super awkward. He's a very nice man, and he smiles at me, and he usually says an encouraging word, but then sometimes I'm wondering, am I really way off here? He's very nice. Very, very nice. When I was studying at Cedarville, one of the Bible classes I was in, there was a book that I had to read, required reading. I would highly recommend it to you. It's an older book. Some of you maybe have read it. It's called Knowing God by J.I. Packer. Anybody read Knowing God by J.I. Packer in the room? That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Love it. Love it. And in this book, he talks about the idea of grace. One of the definitions I've used of grace through the years is one I heard a long time ago from Tim Keller that just stuck with me, and you guys have heard us say it repeatedly here at Summit. Doing good to someone who deserves the opposite of your goodness. Grace is doing good to someone who deserves the opposite of your goodness. So it's costly to the one who's giving the grace. It's shocking to those that are observing the grace being given. And it's traumatic to the one receiving the grace because you know you deserve the opposite of the grace you're receiving. But in the book, J.I. Packer talks about this idea of grace and how many people just give it lip service. That God's grace doesn't touch, or at least they don't acknowledge, how it touches their real life experience. And I guess what I want to articulate today is that's true if you don't really think you need it. If you think that you're good enough, if you think that you're sufficient enough, if you think that you're righteous enough, then God's invitation of the grace that he extends to you actually won't mean that much to you at all. And Packer lays out some truths for those who experience grace, and I bring them up because I think we see Jonah coming to grips with God's grace in this prayer that he's having in the belly of a fish. J.I. Packer talks about a couple different essential things. I just wanted to give them to you. There's two, because I thought were really good. The first thing he talks about is the moral ill desert of man. The moral ill desert of man. Really what this means is men and women today really do have a pretty high opinion of themselves. One of the reasons that many people struggle to see grace as beautiful as it actually is because you've come to see yourself as pretty good, or mostly good, or maybe gooder than most. Right? And that flies in the face of actually needing the grace that you need and that I need. Now, some of you in the room, part of your story is, no, I've come to see that grace. Yeah, and that's the reason it's transformative in your life. But on the whole, the culture that we live in, they actually don't see. Maybe sometimes we don't see ourselves as all that bad. Culturally, I think people are pretty kind to themselves. Definitely more kind than they are to others, thus the selective moral outrage culture that we all find ourselves living in. You know that's what we're in, right? It's a selective moral outrage. It's whatever I seem to have my junk together with, I can judge other people because they don't have their junk together like I got my junk together. But then who are you to point out the junk that I don't have together if you think you got that junk together? And this is just the cycle that we're in. And so we live this idea of just comparing ourselves to other people, and I'm not as bad as that person, therefore. In his book, J.I. Packer said it this way. I thought it was pretty good. The thought of themselves as creatures fallen from God's image, rebels against God's rule, guilty and unclean in God's sight, fit only for God's condemnation, never enters their heads. The Apostle Paul would say it this way. The idea of Christ crucified, the idea of Christ needing to be crucified, foolishness to those who don't know the Lord. Right? It doesn't make any sense at all. Exactly. Because the world we live in, constantly trying to convince themselves that they're not as bad as other people, to feel better about themselves. It's interesting with Jonah, because what you see with Jonah, I think is a really important step in coming to understand God's grace. There's this acknowledgement of God's justice in regards to what he actually deserved. Look back at verse 3. It says, "For you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood surrounded me, and all your waves and your billows passed over me." Stop right there. Here's what Jonah is saying in this moment. He's saying, "I am fit for your condemnation." Jonah's saying in this moment, "I deserve what I'm getting." And Packer talks about when it comes to really receiving grace, this other piece. This idea of the spiritual impotence of man. Because the culture you live in, while maybe finally acknowledging that they're not that great, right? Will also say, even though I'm not that great and I've got issues and I make mistakes, I'm going to pay my own way for the mistakes that I've made. I'll pay my own. I acknowledge that I don't have it all together. I know I got things, but I'll pay my own way for my things. And that's incredibly challenging in the world we live in, because the world you and I live in is just trying to sell you a better way to cope with you. The world you live in is, here's how you fix it. TV shows, podcasts, books, unfortunately at times some sermons. Here's how you fix you. Or here's the steps to get God on your good side. Or your blessed side. Or your best life now side. Or your breakthrough side. All the sides. Here's how you fix you. That line of thinking has always been around, that you can fix yourself. It would have been around in Jonah's day. And in this prayer, you can see Jonah saying, I'm not going to buy into that lie. Look at verse 6. "At the roots of the mountains, I went down to the land whose bars closed upon me forever. Yet you brought up my life from the pit. Oh Lord, my God, when my life was fainting away, I remembered the Lord and my prayer came to you into your holy temple." Jonah says, the bars are closed around me forever. I'm not trying to convince myself that I am worthy in and of myself. And when you are convinced that you can't save yourself, grace is the most beautiful thing you've ever seen and you've ever received. Jonah says in verse 7 that his prayer came to the Lord, it says, into your holy temple. And in verse 4, he had said that he looked to the Lord's holy temple. Interesting wording. Here's what Jonah would have known in regards to the temple. It was there that God up to this point, this is where God had promised to speak. Exodus 25, verses 21 and 22 says, "And you shall put the mercy seat on the top of the ark, and in the ark you shall put the testimony that I shall give you. There I will meet with you, and from above the mercy seat, from between the two cherubim that are on the ark of the testimony, I'm going to speak to you about all that I'm going to give you in commandment for the people of Israel." So the mercy seat, yeah, the mercy seat was a slab of gold over the top of the Ark of the Covenant, and the Ten Commandments were there. And when the Day of Atonement arrived, the priest would make a sacrifice for the sins of the people and sprinkle the blood of that sacrifice on the mercy seat. Tim Keller says it this way: "The temple was the residence of the holy God, his perfect moral righteousness represented by the Ten Commandments, which no human being ever has or ever can keep. How shall we approach God then? Won't the law condemn us? Yes, it would, except for the blood of the atoning sacrifice on the mercy seat over the Ten Commandments, shielding us from the condemnation. It is only when the death of another secures our forgiveness that we can speak with God." And here, I just say that to say this. Here's what we know, because we can see fully what only Jonah could see partially, and others. This is an incredible picture of what Jesus would do, what Jesus has done. Because why? There's no need any longer for the animal sacrifices that you see in the Old Testament. These grace, you could call them grace truths that you see in the sacrificial system are done away with because grace, and I said it at the beginning of 2019 as we were going through one of our series, grace has a face and his name is Jesus, and that changes everything. But again, if you don't think you're that bad, if you don't think that you're needy, if you're always justifying yourself and your choices, not only will grace not be that big of a deal to you, neither will Jesus. Because he is the one who said of himself that he is grace. Yeah? Full of grace and truth. Verse 8 says, those who pay regard to vain idols forsake their hope of steadfast love. But I, with the voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will pay. Salvation belongs to the Lord. So Jonah ends his prayer in the belly of the fish. Salvation belongs to the Lord. In verse 8, he speaks to vain idols. He speaks to worthless idols. He speaks to the fact that none of them could ever deliver him or anyone. And it's against that dark background that you see this beautiful picture of God's grace, because this is what Jonah is getting at as he proclaims what he proclaims. The steadfast love of God, the grace of God, the covenant love of God. Some would say that verse 9 here is the summary verse of all of Scripture. The whole Bible in a verse. Salvation comes from the Lord. We talk about it pretty nonstop around Summit. God is redeeming people. This was and is the message of Jesus. Salvation comes from the Lord. This is what your life, my life, our life actually is about proclaiming in every aspect of our life. Salvation comes from the Lord. And this is something not just that we acknowledge at one point in time. This is something that we continue to grow in, the process of grace. The daily constant reminder that salvation comes from the Lord. It is what makes the gospel so unique that in a world that is made up of religious people, and in a world that is made up of irreligious people, and in a world that is made up of Christ followers, this message rings true. You have your most irreligious and your most religious, and most people think that their folks are somewhere in the middle, but that's not what Jonah is saying. It's not what the Bible's saying, and it's not what the gospel says. The gospel says salvation is from the Lord, right? So the irreligious person does not realize that they need salvation. They think they're doing just fine, and if they've got any issues, they'll pay their way. And you can flip that around and you can say religious people who don't truly understand the gospel think that salvation is from them. They're also still trying to pay their way. Maybe the way they pay their way looks different than the way the irreligious person thinks they're going to pay their way into next life's karma. But nonetheless, still pay their own way. But these verses in Jonah remind all of us that salvation is from the Lord, and it's what you and I need the first time we come to him, and then for the rest of our days. Colossians 1 says it this way: all over the world, the gospel is bearing fruit and growing, just as it has been doing among you since the day you heard it and understood God's grace in all of his truth. I love how Paul talks to the church at Colossae here. The gospel has borne fruit in you. This organic metaphor, transformation. When? When did it bear fruit? When has it borne fruit? The day you understood the grace of God and all his truth. So the grace of God brings you to your first encounter with God, but also to all of your transformation and all of your sanctification for all of your days as you are in relationship with God. And here's what's interesting, because you're going to see it as we can. We got a couple more chapters to go here in Jonah. What you're going to understand is, is that Jonah, I mean, this is a great prayer. It's a really good prayer. But Jonah doesn't get it fully. He's getting it, but he hadn't got it. Not as deeply as we think, even when we read these verses here in the midst of being in the belly of a fish. And could it be possible? Could it be possible? I'll just ask a question as we close our time today. Could it be possible that we still have more to learn and discern and process and grow in when it comes to the grace of God in our lives? I'm convinced that so many of us in the room love the Lord, walk with the Lord. Yet I'll ask you this question. Are there still moments where you struggle with self-righteousness? If so, there's still more to process about grace. Do you still find yourself at times thinking, I'll pay my own way for my mistake? There's still more for us to process about grace. Do you fall into the trap of thinking that you don't really sin or do bad things, or at least I don't do as bad of things as other people are doing bad things? Well, there's still more to learn about grace. Are you constantly comparing yourself to other people who are doing worse things than you as you've come up with the list? Well, then there's more for us to learn about grace. Do you still get defensive when you're confronted about your sin? There's more to learn about grace. Are you an excuse maker ever? Well, there's more for us to process and grow in regards to grace. As I was wrapping this up in my notes, I just wrote down three questions that I think would be good for us to process through. And I know from the questions last week, a lot of life groups went through them and there were some good conversations around them. My life group together, a life group discussed a few things I thought was really good last week. But I'll just pose these questions to you and think about them and process through them. Number one, do you know more about grace theologically and biblically than you are living and experiencing and extending practically? Do you know more about grace theologically and biblically than you are currently living and experiencing and extending practically? Yeah, like, personally, it didn't take me long to ponder that question, to look at a few areas of my life where I'm going, well, I know that's true theologically, but I'm not applying that practically in that area. Another way we could ask a couple of questions would be, currently, are you defensive or are you confessing? The process of grace in our life. Are we defensive or are we confessing? It's real interesting when Jonah gets into the belly of that fish, man. He begins to confess, doesn't he? Maybe another way we could ask it, are you running from or running towards? Are you running from or running towards? This isn't in my notes, but I'll say it. Are you, with the people you do life with the most, that you're closest with, are you, are you quick to extend the process of grace to them in their life to the degree that it's been extended to you in your life? I think that's an issue for us sometimes, right? Well, I'm super thankful for the process. Super thankful for the process of grace in my life. The Lord's been kind. He's been gracious. Yeah. But are you also extending that to those that you're doing life with, that the process of grace will continue to be transformative in their life? Are you pretty short? Pretty expectant? Verse 10 says, and the Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah out upon dry land. Which I think leads to a very logical question. What happens after living in a fish for a few days and being vomited back up? Come back next week. We will pick up the story. It's what they call a cliffhanger in the business. As we were putting the service together this week, Gray and I talking a little bit, you know, we thought this would actually be a fantastic morning based on what we're talking about to take communion together. An opportunity to stop in the quietness of our seats and ponder his sacrifice on our behalf, to appropriately be overwhelmed by the grace given to us. So I'll ask the team, if they would, to come back up. I'll invite some of our deacons and ushers to get in place to get ready to pass. And as they do so, I want to invite you to bow your heads and close your eyes in the quietness of your seat there. And I know, like I said, we have some guests with us today. And I would just say this, if you're a guest here today and you have a relationship with the Lord, you are more than welcome to partake in communion here with the Summit family today. The table's open to you. And as the elements are passed here in just a moment, just on a practical side note, things are kind of double stacked, and so you can take two cups out at once. And as Grayson and the rest of the team sing over us in these next few moments, we're going to be doing two songs. At any point in time during those songs, feel free to take communion there in the quietness of your seat, remembering well the grace extended to us through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. That is still so available daily to you and to me. Was it a grace of justification? Yes. But is there also the grace of continued transformation and sanctification? Yes. May we be appropriately overwhelmed at his kindness, goodness, and grace towards us. Because it is that grace and that grace alone that will properly, fully, wholly motivate us to continue to experience transformation, that the beauty and the hope of the gospel will be held on display through our life. It is a sweet, sweet process. Father God, we thank you. We thank you for Jesus. We desire in this moment not to say that or process through that flippantly, quickly, simplistically, but to truly ponder your kindness and your grace shown to us through your Son. His sacrifice, his obedient sacrifice, which makes our redemption possible and secure and full. We love you. Continue to change us. Transform us, sanctify us, as we are overwhelmed by your kindness and grace shown to us through Jesus Christ. And we will thank you. In Jesus' sweet name, amen.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. For more information about Summit Upstate and other available resources, check out our website at summitupstate.org.